from Sacramento, California.
Thank you, Jared. I'm Alice. I'm a recovered alcoholic. I'm happy to be here. Thank you for the invitation and welcome to those who are new. What's poppin'? I said that for one of my friends here in the room. Really nice to see some familiar faces. So I'm going to be talking about fear and sex. What a combo. And I'm going to, God, you know, I want to treat this topic with respect. And I'll share from the literature as well as my personal experience. And I'm going to say up front that, like, I want to stick to the big book. And I've heard different interpretations and different number of columns and different ways to do this writing, and that's absolutely fine. You know, it's the spirit of what we're, it's the exact nature of our wrongs. It's not necessarily how many columns there are, or if our lines are straight, or you know, any of that stuff. So anything I say that might be different than you've been directed by your own sponsor, like, just don't, you don't have to listen to me. You know, I'm gonna start with bottom of 65. Nope, bottom of 67. Notice that the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, the employer, and the wife. This short word seems to touch about every aspect of our lives, evil and corroding thread, evil and corroding. On the next page, it says that I'll be classed with stealing. That's some really, like, strong language. And when I first came in, well, first I'll tell you guys a story. The very first meeting I ever went to in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was sitting there crying, crying, and I was drunk. And a woman next to me was very sweet, and she's handing me tissues, and she's like patting my knee, and she's like, "It's gonna be okay." And then she whispers in my ear, she goes, "I know it's scary." And I went, "I'm not scared." And when I left, I was like, "They don't know me at all." And I just had no. I had no awareness that fear was underlying all of this. I thought I was just, you know, I just don't want to sit with you guys. I'm not afraid. Yes, I was afraid. I was very, very afraid. I'm on 68 now. We reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper, even though we had no resentment in connection with them. And this is, of course, after we've done the resentment inventory. And this is, of course, after we've taken steps one, two, and three, you know. So for context, like, for anyone who might be new, just in the simplest terms, in step one, I recognize that I'm going to drink no matter what, that I can't use my mind to stop myself from picking up that first drink, powerless over the first one, not just after. I can't control it once I start drinking. But I can't stop myself from picking up that first one, despite how strong I'm staying. And I'm in the no matter what club, and I'm going to promise to pick up the phone. And then I can't do any of that because I have no mental defense against the first drink. And that's really scary. And it terrified me into accepting step two, which is just to have an open mind about the spiritual. If your human power has failed and you keep doing this insane thing of picking up when you don't want to, maybe there's a power greater than you that can restore you to sanity. Wouldn't that be nice? Like, it's like, yes, thank you. Yes, that would be nice. And then in step three, I'm making a decision to seek this power and to stop trying to play God. It says in step three, first, we had to quit playing God. It doesn't say first, believe in God. First, quit playing God. If I can do that, if I can just stop having a way things are supposed to go and trying to direct the play, then I'm on my way. And then I make this decision that the nature of my relationship with this higher power is that that power is guiding me. I'm not ordering it around. And then in step four, in the beginning, I get to see that resentment is the, you know, is the number one thing that's blocking me from this power. And this is all about my self-centeredness that I could not see until you had me write it down on paper. And so now we're at the fear inventory, and this is after we've done the last piece of writing for resentment, where it's talking about disregarding what they did and looking at our own mistakes. And now we're looking at fear. And it says we reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper, even though we had no resentment in connection with them. Then it says we asked ourselves why we had them. Why do I have these fears? And I can get into the weeds on this, and I can do a lot of writing on this. My personal opinion is that it's not necessary because of the next question. It says, we ask ourselves why we had them. Wasn't it because self-reliance failed us? If I can see that, I don't think I need to do any more analyzing. But again, that's my approach here. And it may not be yours, and that's totally, totally cool. But I see that self-reliance failed me. Like, if me relying on me, if my way was truly working and the way things are supposed to go, what would I be afraid of? Nothing, you know? And the book doesn't name our fears for us here. It just is like, you have them. You have a whole bunch of these fears. But some of my personal examples that seem to be pretty common amongst us are like, I'm afraid of what you think of me. I'm nervous right now. Like I get nervous when I speak. And why? Because I'm thinking about me. You know, if I were just thinking about helping the next person, which is what I want to just think about helping the next person. But I think about myself, and that's because self-reliance fails me, and I have something to be afraid of. My way isn't working. So the way I do this writing is just a list of fears, and including I'm afraid of what you think of me. Other common fears can be being alone, being with people, fear of intimacy. Fear of relapse, fear of sobriety, fear of writing inventory, fear of someone getting to know me, fear of being found out. I mean, it's just the list is endless. But the kinds of fears that I don't believe we're talking about are like phobias, like spiders, or self-preservation fears. Like if I were camping, I think I would be afraid of bears. But that's not on my list. I'm not camping right now. I heard a speaker once say, and I was so beautiful because he said, I still get afraid, but not in advance. Right? If I think of all the things I'm afraid of, it's stuff that hasn't happened yet, or stuff from the past that like I can't change. So it's illogical at best, and yet I still have them because I'm relying on me. It goes on to say, I think I read that part. Self-reliance was good as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. Some of us once had great self-confidence, but it didn't fully solve the fear problem or any other. When it made us cocky, it was worse. I got this. No, I don't. No, I do not. Oh, man. And I love these next paragraphs so much. Perhaps there is a better way. I almost think Bill's being a little snarky here, like, hey, maybe there's another way. What do you think? We think so. For we are now on a different basis already. Now, as I'm writing my fourth step, I still have, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 to go, but already I'm on this different basis. And isn't that fantastic that we get to? I mean, there are some promises in the fourth step, just as there are promises in the third step. Like we get to experience these things as we go along. For we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. It makes sense. Again, when I go back to pages 60 and 61, the actor who wants to run the whole show, we can see clearly through that passage that it doesn't work, and it doesn't work for any human being, alcoholic or not. It doesn't work for me. It doesn't work when I see it in other members of the family or my friends, and like, and that's not to look down on them. It's just to recognize that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. That I'm having compassion for the person who's running on self-will rather than like, oh, they're mean to me or they wronged me. Like, no, they're probably just self-centered like any other human being on the planet. Maybe they're just full of fear. The people who I think hurt me were just afraid, just like me. And so I'm trusting infinite God rather than my finite self. And that's one of those, it's easier said than done, but like, When I came in, I had zero conception, zero belief in a higher power. And just by becoming so broken and recognizing that I couldn't fix myself, it just came to me, like the book says, you know, the consciousness of my belief came to me. I didn't have to manufacture it or be like, I'm going to pretend to trust in God. Like I didn't, you know, I didn't know what I was trusting in. I just didn't trust in myself. And I started feeling this different energy around me and in you. And so I started feeling that evidence. And then the trust is just there. I'm getting to feel it. There's no reason to distrust it anymore. And it feels like a gift. It doesn't feel like something I brought upon myself or came to from, you know, an intellectual place. But check out this next line. We are in the world to play the role he assigns. We're not puppets. We're not like, you know, we get to be active here. God assigns us each a role. I still get to be the actor on stage. I'm just the actor. I'm not trying to be the director anymore. I'm not trying to fill a seat that's not mine. Just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us, as we think. I don't always know what God wants me to do. I'm not going to like, but I'm not afraid to make mistakes anymore because I can learn from them. And just to the extent that I do as I think God would have me and humbly rely on him, he does enable me to match calamity with serenity. And I see so many faces in here that I know have experienced that, you know, like nodding and smiling. Like, yeah, when there's calamity around and you're like, why am I so calm? You know, like, it's a trip, man, but it's real. It's absolutely real. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our creator. And I used to do that. I used to be afraid to talk about God in meetings because I didn't want to scare the newcomer away. And that was a fear. I don't have that fear today because God can guide my words, you know, and I can help the newcomer without hiding our solution. We can laugh at those who think spirituality the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. The verdict of the ages, like this isn't new stuff. It's not like, you know, Bill came up with this all new concepts. You know, it's this is timeless, timeless spiritual principles long before the big book came about. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be at once we commence to outgrow fear. And this is, I mean, this is a little prayer that I can use in day-to-day life, not just in the writing in my fourth step, but and I usually will have the people I work with when we're doing the fifth step. As they read their fear inventory, I'm asking them to read it as a prayer, asking God to remove these fears and direct their attention to what God would have them be. God reliant. That's what God would have us be. God reliant, you know, but in day-to-day life, you know, as soon as I recognize a fear, I ask God to remove it. That's in alignment with my step 10 practice, but I can add to it, you know, direct my attention to what you would have me be. And I know anytime I'm afraid, it's because I'm relying on Alice power, which doesn't go very far. So now about sex. Many of us needed an overhauling there, but above all, we tried to be sensible on this question. Above all, we tried to be sensible. This paragraph goes on to use some old-timey language about, you know, straight pepper diet and no flavor for his fare. And as I understand it, that just means whether like no vanilla or what is it? No flavor for his fare. I think of as like, whatever that might mean to you, total abstinence or sex only for procreation, never outside of marriage. And then straight pepper diet, spicy, anything goes. I mean, and I think what they mean is just wherever you fall on that spectrum, we don't care. We're not trying to judge that. We're not trying to judge what kind of partner you have or what kind of sex you have or any of that stuff. But what we are asking you to look at is your own self-centeredness when it comes to sex. And so the writing for this part of the inventory, I see on page 69 where the little paragraph that says, we reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it. So those are the questions that I answer in doing the sex inventory. And I like these questions can also apply to any relationship, sexual or not. But I like to at first focus these questions on sex so that we're not disregarding that. You know, I don't want to say that this isn't a judgment, but like I've heard these questions be applied to any relationship and then taking sex completely out of the picture. And then I would be missing out on some of the revelations I frankly needed to see in this writing. So the way I look at it is like this, when it says, whom had we hurt? I'm not looking at like, here's a list of people I've had sex with. It is a list of people I've hurt where the sex urge is a factor. And so some of the people on my list, I didn't sleep with and some I did, but sex was a factor in the way I harmed them. And one of my personal examples was I would be manipulative, you know, flirt with you to get free drinks or a place to crash, and thought that was perfectly okay, even though I didn't like you. I had no intention of fooling around with you, but you know, I saw no harm in it because men don't have feelings. Like that was my distorted, very, very self-centered thinking. And I needed to look at that. I needed to inventory that. And as I'm looking at the other question, so whom have we hurt? You know, I'm asking God to guide my pen. Who have I hurt when it comes to the sex urge or sex as a factor somehow? And then kind of backtracking the question before that, where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? That question is first. My personal writing, I had to look at who I hurt to kind of unlock the answers for that question. But then I could see it. I could see how selfish and dishonest I was in my manipulation of people and using people. Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, bitterness? Yes, yes, yes. So I was only thinking about me. And, you know, I get to work with a lot of people, and many of us, and this is not part of alcoholism, but many of us have, you know, sexual abuse in our history, as do I. And so it can be easy to get a little tripped up here because, you know, I'll work with someone who's like, but, you know, writing a list of people who hurt them, you know, and it's like, no, we're not, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the people that you hurt. And sometimes it can be hard to separate that, you know? And I will say that like and it really belonged on my resentment inventory, and that's where it landed. Resentment against people who had abused me sexually. And yet it was a result of holding on to that resentment that I later hurt other people, manipulated, because, you know, men don't deserve respect or whatever twisted narrative I had in my head. I later hurt other people, and that did belong on this inventory. And I got to see it in black and white, the way I mistreated others because I had been mistreated, and thinking that that somehow made it okay. And it absolutely wasn't. The next part, where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? Now we get to beat ourselves up. No, I'm just kidding. It's really easy to beat ourselves up and be like, oh my God, I shouldn't have done that. Or, you know, like, but I look at it, what should I have done instead? And Well, I'll clarify it. We got this all done on paper and looked at it. In this way, we tried to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. So, what should I have done instead is about shaping my future, not beating up my past. And I have to be really clear on that, or I'll go down that little spiral of self-pity, which is the opposite. It's so self. I can't get twisted in that. So I'm looking at what should I have done instead can be like, what do I think God would want me to do going forward? If I were in this situation again, what would a God-directed sex life look like? And the answer to the questions of what should I have done instead are shaping my future sex life. And check it out. Like I said, we subjected each relation to this test. Was it selfish or not? And there's an opportunity to do writing on any relationship, taking sex out of the equation if we wish to look at our relationships with any human being in our life, because of course these questions can be applied there too. With my mom, with my neighbor, my relationship with God, I can answer these questions too. I just like to also make sure that I'm not forgetting to take a look at my sexual behavior when it comes to, or my self-centeredness when it comes to actual sex too. We asked God, here's a prayer, to mold our ideals and help us to live up to them. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised and loathed. I'd already been alive and having sex for quite a few years before I found that out. But I'm grateful to have that message today, that we get to have a God-directed sex life. And it gets to look different for each one of us. How amazing is it that a book written 85 years ago, by a couple of straight white men still holds true today? It does. Whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow towards it. And this ideal came out of me writing the way I hurt people and what I should have done instead. If I'm not willing to grow towards that means I still want to hurt people. I'm not letting go of that self-centeredness. We must be willing to make amends where we have done harm, provided that we do not bring about still more harm in so doing. And I had to make amends to some exes. That's not off the table. I have heard sometimes like, oh, never make amends to an ex-boyfriend or ex-girlfriend because that could be yes, it can be problematic. But it's not a definite no-no. Because, I was able to do it with God directing me and come to the person from a spiritual place. And it was awkward and really weird. And I'm so grateful that God enabled me to face it. In other words, we treat sex as we would any other problem. Any other problem. Like, any problem in my life, I can apply to this. I can apply to what would God have me do? What would God have me be willing to grow towards that. In meditation, ask God for direction. Make amends where I've done harm, accept that would bring about more harm. Simple. In meditation, we ask God what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come. If we want it. If I don't want it, I won't get the right answers because I don't want it, and I was in that place for a long time before coming in here. I did not want to face my self-centeredness. I did not. I mean, if you would have asked me, I would have said, oh, I definitely want to stop hurting people, but I didn't really know how I was hurting people. And I was more consumed with looking at what I want than any way in which I might be harming another human being. God alone can judge our sex situation, right? Man, when I'm working with a woman, if she whatever her questions or concerns or problems might be, or, no matter how early she might be in sobriety or tempted she is to date, I just share my own experiences. I try to stop somebody from doing something. They're probably going to do it anyway. I'm not trying to manage someone else's life. I can guide them towards God that will manage theirs. God alone can judge our sex situation. Counsel with persons is often desirable, but we let God be the final judge. We realize that some people are as fanatical about sex as others are loose. We avoid hysterical thinking or advice. Thank you so much, Jared. I have to avoid that hysterical thinking or don't do that or do that. I have to avoid that. Suppose we fall short of the chosen ideal and stumble. Does this mean we're going to get drunk? Some people tell us so, but this is only a half truth. It depends on us and our motives. So I know my motives aren't always a fail-safe way to see whether I'm playing God or not, because in step three, I see that, I can be really kind and play God with you at the same time. But when it comes to sex, when it comes to my sex ideal, how I want to show up going forward in a God-directed sex life, if I fall short of the chosen ideal, the ideal that I shaped through seeing what I did wrong and asking God to guide that, if I fall short of that, does that mean I'm going to get drunk? Maybe. But here it's if we are sorry for what we have done and have the honest desire to let God take us to better things, we believe we'll be forgiven and we'll have learned our lesson. If we're not sorry and our conduct continues to harm others, we are quite sure to drink. I'm not theorizing. These are facts out of our experience. So what they're saying is like, we already tried that. The writers are like, yeah, we already we you know we tried to like continue that old behavior and it didn't work. And like a personal example, let's say I, because this is old behavior, but I used to be very like very flirtatious because I had all these insecurities and I wanted you to think I was cute. And so I'll flirt with somebody. I have no interest in them at all, but I just want you to flirt back so I can feel okay about myself. And that's old behavior. It's manipulative. It's dishonest, very self-centered. And that is not my ideal anymore. And if I were to do that today, I would hopefully recognize it for what it is and be sorry and ask God, take me to better things. But if I were to do that today and be like, what? It's fine. I'm justifying my self-centered behavior, and that's going to block me from the power I need. And so, yeah, a drink would probably seem like a reasonable idea, even though I know better. Can't afford that. To sum up about sex, we earnestly pray for the right ideal. Earnestly, I have to mean it. I have to want it. For guidance in each questionable situation, for sanity, and for the strength to do the right thing. If sex is very, I set my own alarm too, sorry. If sex is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. In step four, we can help others. How about that? Right? We're probably not sponsoring at this point, but we can help others. We are to be helpful to others really from the very start. And there's a million ways in which we can do that. So in that same scenario, let's say that I'm at a meeting and I find myself flirting with somebody because I feel bad about myself and I want you to make me feel better. So I'm flirting with somebody and I have no business doing that. And I recognize it in myself and I'm praying I'm going to go find myself a female newcomer to help. We think of their needs and work for them. This takes us out of ourselves. It quiets the imperious urge when to yield would mean heartache. Yeah, it would be causing harm for other people and myself. I don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to go around hurting people. I want to be helped. I want to go around helping people. If we have been thorough about our personal inventory, we have written down a lot. Yes, we have. We have listed and analyzed our resentments. We have begun to comprehend their futility and their fatality. Useless and deadly. Not a whole lot of value in holding on to resentment, is there? We have commenced to see their terrible destructiveness. We have begun to learn tolerance, patience, and goodwill toward all men, even our enemies. Even our enemies. I don't have any enemies today. And that was what a beautiful thing to be able to say, right? Like, man, where we look on them as sick people and not look down on them, like, oh, you're so sick. You know? Because when I'm resentful, I am the sick man, you know, like I'm not better than anyone else. We have listed the people we have hurt by our conduct and are willing to straighten out the past if we can. Here, I think, is the third reference of, oh, that's my time. But the third reference of making amends to people in step four. We're planting that seed for 8 and 9. And I know that's my time. I'm just going to read in this book you read again and again that faith did for us, but we could not do for ourselves. We hope you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from him. If you've already made a decision on an inventory of your grocery handicaps, you have made a good beginning. That being so, you swallow and digest some big chunks of truth about yourself. Thank you for letting me share.